welcome in. Latest episode of that SEC podcast. Marler Monday on a Tuesday because we're not a priority. What's up, buddy?
You are not a priority. You're looking live. Mike, I'm in a bad mood. I'm ready to fight everyone. Let's have a great day.
Yeah, I got my heart rate going because you told me that off air, so I knew I had to come in guns a-blazing. What's got you upset now? Did you get arrested again? Did you have to give up your baloney?
If you want to be a dick, I mean, I'll just make it really uncomfortable. Did you see the story about the...
Your baloney pony?
The teacher who got run over by a car when he was chasing after his students on the prank.
Oh, man. Yeah, a tragedy. I did see that.
Yeah, that was a college classmate of mine.
Mm.
Well, but other than that, things are great. I'm here with you. You always make me feel better. but yeah, just a fun little day. Jeez Louise, just talking to himself in the comments. yeah, I mean, no, it's like this is my favorite time of year because there's so much action to gamble on for one.
Oh, I thought you meant you were getting action.
Oh, what's up? No, what? I'm almost married. Why would that happen? Allie does have her bachelorette party this weekend in Chicago, so that should be fun.
Nashville, huh?
No, she's one of the few people not getting her bachelorette party in Nashville. I think Brodo is going to be coming to Baton Rouge for the weekend, and we're going to sit around the kiddie pool and oil each other up, have a great little weekend. Know what I mean?
Well, any chance she would be going to Nashville if they had a... not a Nepto baby head coach.
I respect Bruce Pearl. I like Bruce Pearl a lot.
I do too.
There's not a lot of Bama fans I think that like him. Like this whole idea that he's such a terrible person. Like if you don't like his politics, fine, what the fuck ever. But also just know that usually when you hate someone's politics, your politics are in nature just as egregiously awful to that person. So that I think is like real dumb, but the idea that he went in front of a camera and they were like, was it a Nepo hire? And he could have said anything. And he was like, yeah, that's exactly what it was. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah. I've said on this show multiple times, and I think Rick Barnes is a hell of a coach.
Yeah.
But I think Bruce Pearl's the best Tennessee coach of all time. So he's always number one in my heart. I've met him personally. He was a great to me. So, hey, let's start right there because you said you wanted to talk the SEC tournament. Auburn going to go on a run? No, just kidding. Is it Florida or I mean, is there any shot anybody other than Florida wins this damn thing?
Well, my article on the SEC preview just went up at LouisianaSports.net. Shameless plug. I wonder how I can put that in the comments. Can I put that in the comments?
I can do it.
You can? Here, I'm going to send it to you. I don't know how to do it, but I'll send it. I'll just DM it to you on Twitter. Okay. And
delete it real quick.
I think it's going to be a fun tournament for one. There was even this past Saturday, which we should probably start there. This past Saturday with like the way the season closed out, the regular season closed out, there were so many seeds still on the line. Missouri had that crazy thing, which like they could end up at number three. They could drop down to number 10 if a couple things like shook out a certain way. Oklahoma has apparently caught fire. Auburn is just on fire in the worst way possible. South Carolina gets off the 16 seed line by hitting a last second buzzer beater. So that was pretty cool. There's a lot of storylines. Florida is the least exciting storyline because it's the one that feels like it's the most, yeah, that's going to happen. So who cares? Like in the preview I wrote, it was like, who's going to win? I was like, Florida. And I'm not even going to get into it. It feels like such a foregone conclusion. They're the heavy favorite to win. They should be the heavy favorite to win. But I think this weekend was interesting for a lot of reasons. Cause you had a lot of teams with a lot to, you have a lot of, what's the best way to put it? There's only a couple teams, I think, with a lot to lose, but you have a couple teams, I think, with a lot to gain, especially from an NCAA tournament seeding. You look at the bracket, bring the bracket back up. Is
Auburn number one on that list? Like they need a win to secure I know we were kidding around, but to secure an NCAA bid?
Yeah. So I think they have to at least win the first. If they win the first game, I don't think that guarantees them a spot. If they lose the first game, that does guarantee they will not be in the tournament because Mississippi State, as bad as some of these other teams are, I believe they are the lowest ranked team in the net rankings, but at maybe because I know like LSU is like 78. Maybe South Carolina's lower, but I doubt it. Mississippi State's at like 111. If you lose to them, I mean, Auburn's had a very – they played the most difficult schedule in the country, and over half their games, 16 of their 31 games, were against quad one teams. Problem is you only won four of those games. And the close loss to Houston doesn't really carry as much weight when you only have four wins against good competition and you close out the season losing 8 of 10 games. If they lose, they are out of the tournament. I compare it to like – you ever seen a bald dude with a fucking ponytail and you're like, brother, fucking give it up. Like what is going on?
That's what Cousin Shane's got in the back. He's just embarrassed to show it.
Dude, what if he did? What if Cousin Shane had a rat tail the whole time? That'd be sick. I think that if they are able to like figure out a way to win, I don't think their work is done yet, because right now they've been holding on to that last team in for quite some time in Joe Lunardi's bracketology. They are currently the first team out. But there's also, you have to think too, there's all these conference tournaments and there's a lot of these like automatic qualifiers that you're going to have some upsets. So you need to have yourself a little bit of leniency and leeway to figure out who is going to get in, especially if those last four teams in, who's going to be playing Tuesday in Dayton or whatever it is. So
I can promise you one thing though, Chris, just knowing Tennessee basketball like I do,
mm-hmm.
which is not well, but knowing it as well as I do, they'll, you know, they hate Stephen Pearl because of comments he's made.
Yeah.
And the nepotism or whatever. But I bet Auburn limps, like barely beats State and then smokes Tennessee. That's my prediction now. I don't want that to happen, but I bet you it will.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, and that would be huge for them. Like, that would be huge for them if they were able to do that. This is not a time where Tennessee usually thrives. Also, I do want to give a shout out real quick to Pamela Younger, 8257, who says the women's tournament was good until the last game. Totally agree. That was a fucking heartbreaker and brutal loss for South Carolina, who came down. It felt like I was watching football again. They were down by 14 in the first 5 minutes of the game, and that was really frustrating, but still a great season. I think they're going to obviously get a one seed. So I'm not super concerned about that. But back to the men's tournament, I think you look at like the way I was trying to look at this and who are teams that could make a run. Just to be honest, the way I went into it was, okay, anybody in that top half that isn't orange and blue – yeah, I mean, like they are probably good luck. Not going to, yeah. I mean, best of luck, dude. That sounds awful. Then you look at the bottom half of the bracket and then you look at like Wednesday, like what teams on Wednesday can make a run. I cannot get myself to believe in Kentucky enough to get by Florida, especially after playing back-to-back days. I cannot get myself to believe in Auburn to do it back-to-back days, 'cause they haven't had back-to-back wins in quite some time. But then I look at that Oklahoma team, man. Oklahoma is a team that's won six of their last eight games. They've won four straight at the end of the season, and four of those four games were almost by 12 points per game. And then you get a chance to go play A&M. Now, A&M is a team that has had a really good team and a really good season in comparison to where they thought they were going to be. I think they were like picked 13th in the preseason, but I've been very vocal about what I think about this A&M basketball team.
You hate them.
I don't think they're very good because they don't beat a lot of good teams. And the way that they have closed out the season, they started off great. But since January 21st, they only have two wins against conference tournament – or I'm sorry, against tournament teams. So, like, I don't think that they are going to be able to make a lot of noise. So if I'm looking at Oklahoma and I'm sitting here thinking, like, what do I have to do to get into the tournament? You have to obviously win at least that first game. You have to win a second game. And you probably need to figure out a way to get to Sunday. If they can get to Sunday, that means they would have won 9 straight games before ultimately, I'm assuming, losing to Florida. And so I think from that team, the list of teams on Wednesday, that's the one I think that has the best chance to make a run in the tournament because they have the easiest path out of anyone else. Now, the other one, if you look at the one seed over, you know, Georgia, I think it's a team that scores a ton of fucking points. They were a pretty big matchup nightmare for Bama because of how much bigger they are and better at rebounding. And that proved to be the case when they played in Athens last week. So maybe they're a team that can move on. I just have zero faith that anybody's going to get past Florida, especially with extra rest. So that first group, Kentucky and Missouri, especially, I don't see them having a long trip to Nashville. Now, the other one too, Mike, is Vanderbilt seems to be consistently overlooked. And that's a team that has not just the second most quad one wins of any team in the SEC this year with 8. They have, I think it's like tied for 11th most in the country. on the season. I think they went 8-6 in quad one games. That is the second best mark in the SEC. They have been really, really good. They score a ton of points, and they have been much improved from last year. Now, again, they have to fucking play Florida, and they would have to play them as early as Saturday. So that is a tough one. But if you keep in mind, you look at the way the season went, Florida beat Vanderbilt when they played earlier this year, but they only beat them by 4 points. I think that Vanderbilt it's worth noting that they could potentially make a run to Sunday if things go right enough and Florida misses enough shots in their potential showdown. The other thing with Vanderbilt is, and same for Tennessee, those teams are still trying to fight to get off the 5 seed line. I think there's a big difference in the tournament in terms of being a 5 seed versus a 4 seed, because the 4 seed, and you have that 5 versus 12 matchup in round one, that is consistently and notoriously been a very, very big matchup nightmare for a lot of 5 seeds. Right now, you have Arkansas, Tennessee, and Vanderbilt, who are all kind of in the middle fighting for a 5 seed. I think if any of those teams wins multiple games this weekend, they will be able to jump up off that line. And if they figure out a way to win, they can jump all the way to a 3 seed.
Hey, shout out our buddy Liquid in the comments. He had a question for you. Who do you think will be Florida's opening opponent? So it'll be either Missouri or the winner of LSU, Kentucky. Who do you think is most likely to face Florida in that first game on, what was that, the Friday?
So that's tough, man, because I feel like I have been reluctantly still believing in
LSU.
And no, they are so fucking bad. That was my lock of the week this week, was A&M over LSU. It took 3 overtimes to fucking do it. And I was just sitting there with a fucking sack of crawfish over our kitchen table, just having a fantastic, yeah, that would be fucking sick if it was, dude. Can you imagine being sponsored by Victoria's Secret, you fucking idiot? What kind of repressed homosexuality are you dealing with that you don't want to have Victoria's Secret stuff out in the open like that? Anyway,
that'd be the best opening line at the bar you could possibly have. You know, I could get you 25% off or something, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know why you'd open with that. That's tough. So here's the big thing I have. They have both of these teams are pretty bad away from home. I think they're both like 5-8 away from home this season, Kentucky and Mizzou. I like Mizzou a little bit more because I think they're tougher and they've won more proven games than Kentucky has. Am I wrong? Didn't Mizzou go on the road and beat Florida? Was that last year? I think it was last year, actually. But I just think Kentucky has fallen so many times on their face. Maybe they put it all together and are able to win the first 2 games. I think they'll beat LSU. But, dude, even you think about this year, hats off to them because they had an 18-point come-from-behind win to do it, and that's great, and it was on the road. But they almost lost to LSU, who was hands down the worst team in the conference. I just believe in the Mizzou team a lot more. And the Mizzou also, they are so much tougher, especially in the paint, than people realize. And they're very fucking big. Now, listen, away from home is where they've been into trouble. At home this year, they were great. They were 15-3. They had a heartbreaker in overtime to Arkansas this past weekend, which was really impressive since Arkansas didn't even have Darius Acuff. But man, they are a lot better than I think people think. And I for right now, maybe something happens in Nashville, because you know it'll be like a home game for a lot of Kentucky fans that are going to travel like they do for every single time they get into postseason play. But I just don't think this Kentucky team is good enough to move past multiple days in this tournament. So I think Missouri is the one that out of those three.
Mm-hmm. Any shot that Nate Amet plays for Tennessee, star freshman? They really don't look like the same team without him. Let's say he comes back and he returns to form. Could they make a little run here?
I mean, yeah, I would think so. This Tennessee team is so hard to have a feel for this Tennessee team in comparison to some of the past ones, because it felt like some of the past ones, it was like, okay, you got Dalton Knecht, you've got Zakai Ziegler, who that's a porn name from the 80s or 90s for sure, but also a guy that is like, you know, he was there for 6-7 years and it could run the point, and they had a lot of really, really good college basketball players. I don't know if this year's team has a guy or several guys that have that same kind of makeup or like, I don't want to say star.
You like guys with makeup.
I do love guys with makeup.
Hey, I found your burner here. Shout out to Mackey's on fire. Yeah. Marler's awesome. The only reason I have YouTube Premium.
That's awesome. Yeah,
is he on your show ever or just here?
Just here. Him and I share a Brazzers Premium account too, so that's kind of cool. It's not going to be ESPN Radio in Baton Rouge. I will get my radio show, though, on – I think it's this weekend we're starting. Have you been watching the WBC? I have not. I did see that – did a player snort cocaine in the fucking dugout last night?
What is WBC? I don't even know.
God damn it, Mike. The World Baseball Classic.
No. Hell no. And they're doing – maybe they're doing cocaine. I might watch it. That sounds kind of fun.
I'll have to send you the link of the guy who – it looked pretty quite clearly that he was doing cocaine in the dugout last night. Anyway, so I look at this Tennessee team, and you try to think of, like, what do they do well? Well, they give up, like, 69 points a game, which I believe I think that's the best in the SEC. I'm trying to scroll through it real quick. I believe that's the best in the SEC, but being 54th in the country in defense is a far, far cry in comparison to where they were just, like, a season ago, where they ranked – I want to say they were top five in the past couple of years – they were very, very physical on defense, and they still are. They're just not as good defensively. They were top 10 in the country in defense the year before. The year before that, they were, I believe, I'm gonna guess here. They were not top 10. Damn it, Chris. Should have quit while I was ahead. But that's kind of been their MO, is like being physical in the paint, being very, very physical, like in guarding the basketball, and then also beyond the three-point line. They did a great job of that against Alabama, you know. After Emmitt went down, they ended up losing the game. I don't know the tick. Like they're a good team. Like they have played really well this season. They've had some good wins this season, but like they went on the road and beat Bama when they had a fucking professional player. I believe they beat Kentucky. They beat Vanderbilt. They've had some really good wins. They've also had some bad losses. And I think that when you look at their identity, I just don't know what their identity is in comparison to some of the Tennessee teams that we all kind of assumed were better and would make a deeper run into the tournament.
Whoa, team crop duster here. Only thing Tennessee's relevant in is baseball.
They're fucking terrible at baseball right now. What do you like? They just barely won their series this weekend against Wright State. They won, both the wins came by one run. You know, it's
wins
crazy,
a win.
But, sure. The thing that's crazy about Tennessee is they play in a fucking little league field at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. It's a beautiful park. They've made all these like incredible remodeling and renovations, just like Donna Kelsey's home. It's really, really nice. But at the same time, there it is. At the same time, they have not done a great job on really either side, pitching or hitting this year, and especially from a hitting standpoint. Like they rank near the bottom, or maybe they rank at the bottom.
Didn't the season just damn start?
They've been playing for a month. You're playing all your bad teams now, Mike. You're about to go into playing the tough teams.
They're just warming up. Just warming up.
Yeah, I bet.
Just like you on this program. Is there a team that, you know, if you wanted to take a flyer on to wager on, obviously Florida's a heavy, heavy favorite. But if you had $100 to burn, is there a team that you would wager on here?
First off, I do have $100 to burn because I'm fucking rich. Who would it be? You tweeted this 1 second ago. How quickly did you fire off that screenshot, you fucking weirdo?
No, this was like Sunday night.
Okay. Still. Anyway. If I was taking a flyer on a team, I kind of go back to Vandy. I think that Vandy just went on the road in Knoxville and beat Tennessee. That is most likely who they're going to get in round one. And it's hard to beat a team back-to-back like that, especially – well, I was going to say, especially in a place like Nashville, but that's when you're fucking down the road from their campus. I don't know if a lot of Vandy basketball fans are gonna show up, but I think that Vandy is the one that I would look at and say, if I wanted a long shot, like a true long shot, I would say that. These are current at odds.
They were current on Sunday.
Dude, four teams, like only having four teams under 10-1 odds is insane. Some of these other teams, that's wild. I would say also the other one is Arkansas, because Arkansas, the way that they are constructed from a roster standpoint, is really, really impressive. I think that they will be able to obviously win the first game of the tournament on Friday. Now, remember, they lost to Bama on the road, but that was in double overtime when Acuff had like 49 points. I think that they could get them or Georgia and advance to the championship on Sunday. I kind of expect Arkansas to be the team that gets to the championship from that part of the bracket. And I wish I believed more in them to beat Florida, but the last time we saw these two play was in Gainesville and they fucking lost by 34. I just think that the way that they are made, like I said, from a roster standpoint, Nick Pringle is not a great scorer at all, but he's big enough and physical enough that I think he could play decently well against Condon down low. They have the best player in the country in Darius Acuff. I just fully believe he's the best player in the country. He's the best player in the conference for sure. And then you think about the rest of that roster. I mean, Malik Thomas has been great as a freshman, averaging. They got four guys that are averaging double digits, and then Trevin Brazil, who kind of does everything, and kind of is what Hauk is for Florida. He's like that for Arkansas, I think he averaged over 13 points and 7 rebounds per game this year for Arkansas as well. They are built well enough, and they have the coaching that I think where they could potentially beat Florida. I have such little confidence because, dude, you look at bring the bracket back up again. Like you look at this and think about how fucking silly this is. Florida, just say that they get to the championship and the higher seeds all win from the bottom part. So you get Bama, who's very, very good and has been, I think they've won 9 of their last 10 games. They're a 2 seed. They could be a 3 seed in the NCAA tournament. Well, Florida beat the fuck out of them by 23 points. And they beat them by 23. They scored 100 and only hit 3 3-pointers in the whole game. Like, that's almost impossible. Then you look at Arkansas and you're like, man, Arkansas has the player of the year. And that is, they beat them by 34. That's just silly.
Could you make the argument that Arkansas has got the toughest draw just in terms of trying to advance to the final with Bama, with, you mentioned Oklahoma being on a little bit of a heater, A&M gotten potential, like whoever they face, they could conceivably lose every game they have, right?
No, I think Arkansas is going to end up getting to Sunday. I think they have a really good draw. Yeah, dude, because A&M is not good at basketball. they are.
I'm telling Billy, you said that.
Fucking Billy.
Shout out Cousin Rick. If Aggies make it to Friday versus Hogs, huge first year for Buckyball. Florida to win the Natty. Shut your mouth, Marler. That would be huge for A&M.
It would be. I don't disagree with anything he's saying. I think that the benchmark and the bar that you're setting for Texas A&M is, it's different than where it should be. Also, the fact that Buzz Williams left is still fucking insane to me. I don't know why he's in the middle of having Maryland's like worst season in the history of that program. I have no idea why he decided to leave A&M, but that's just kind of what he's done everywhere he's gone, which is be there for 4, 5, 6 years. And then once the expectations start to grow along with his job security, then he ends up leaving. I think it's a phenomenal year for Buckyball in year one. They've been one of the best offensive teams in the country. They were top 10 in scoring. I think that probably didn't change considering they played the 3 overtime game against LSU. They're a really good team in terms of what they can do offensively. But the bottom line is, since January 21st, so a month and a half, they've only beaten 2 tournament teams. They have been bad when the competition has gotten to the toughest part of it. And so I think it would be an awesome story if they were able to do that. But I look at that where Arkansas currently is, and I think that they are a shoe-in to get to Saturday at the very least.
Do you take any issue with this graphic they posted?
First off, just the way it looks is not – I don't love that. Why is the – what? Leave it up here for a second. Let's talk about this. Why is – hold on. Why is this part – oh, I didn't think that through. Why is this part shifted over so much to like the side? It's also a very weird picture of this guy. And then the bottom is in a different font, which, you know how much I fucking hate different font sizes in a graphic. Every part of it is stupid. Like every part of this graphic, just, you should have put the projected 13th in the very middle of it. I don't know why you put the dot, dot, dot. And then you could have said how it started versus how it's going, but you went like, yeah, we were supposed to be 13th. And guess what? We still weren't first. Like, fucking sick, bro. Like,
Tied for fourth. Not even fourth. Tied for fourth.
Imagine if the Miami Marlins came out with a graphic. They were like, y'all said we were going to finish fifth in the NL East. We finished third. Fuck you. You're like, what? What does that even mean?
Hey, speaking of a big FU, FanDuel, they put out odds for everybody to win this thing except for South Carolina.
Oh, man.
Shout out to Lamont Paris. Thoughts on that? Locked on Cox. Your reaction to Lamont Paris coming back for another season? Is Carolina committed?
Marler, how was the gay bar? Dude,
he said he missed you yesterday.
That guy?
And then he said, how was the gay bar? He was on here yesterday. He asked a dozen questions about you. And they were they were all gay questions.
Yeah. Marler sucks, dude. I hate him. How big's his penis? don't clip that. Every week, me and Allie have a conversation about how I need to start being more professional since I'm growing my brand and everything more, and I'm doing more stuff. And then every week, we hit record on here, and I'm like, fucking bang, 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 just like the dumbest shit imaginable. Okay, so here's the thing. I'll give you a real answer. Also, real quick on the gay bar thing, I just can't help but laugh because there was this, like, when I used to be a day bartender, D-A-Y. Bartender in Milledgeville, Georgia, there was this guy, he was our pepper salesman, which, like, usually you just have a vegetable person, or like Cisco delivers food for all sorts of things, but we had one guy who was like a pepper guy, and we used to make fun of him all the time, and this is exactly how he talked. He would walk in and he goes, "Hi, man. I didn't know they turned this place into a gay bar. No, I'm just kidding, man. I'm just kidding. Hey, is Frank here? I got some peppers for him." And you're like, what? And then there was one day he came in and he started talking about how I was like, do you just sell peppers? And he's like, I got my hands in a few different things. Right now I'm selling about 5 or 6 crock pots and a meat swap down there in Macon. And I was like, that was fucking incredible. Anyway, that's my pepper guy story.
Can you give me that guy's contact? Maybe I'll have him on next Monday.
I didn't know it was a gay bar. No, I'm just playing. Yeah, no, I got it. You say it every week you come in here, dude. Every single Tuesday you come in and say it. So maybe the Dollar General brand of media. Okay. Marler will never be the Jordan brand of media. I guess my eyes are too clear. Have you seen that? Mike? Well, that's tough.
The crying Jordan?
No. Have you just seen Michael Jordan's, like, pupils? They are like the white parts that are just... Have you ever seen the Last Dance documentary?
Yeah.
I'll send you a couple screenshots of his eyes. His eyes are... They look like Dijon mustard. It's terrible. Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to give you a very real answer that I've gotten all that out of the way. Here's the thing about South Carolina and Lamont Paris. And I know that everyone cares, but it kind of matters in way more schools than one. And that is this. So Lamont Paris goes in first year. He wins 13 games in SEC play. They finish third. He goes 26-8 on the year.
Shout out, Steven Up, $10 to get Marler to stop telling his stories.
That's fair. So Lamont Paris wins 26 games, and now you're at a time too for South Carolina. We're like, okay, hold on, we're really good at women's basketball. Football just went 9-4, actually that was the year after that. So, but like, you need something to hang your hat on, right? He goes to the tournament, and why do you think that would? There's no reason for you to think that would fall off, like. There's no reason to think that you would take this drastically big of a step back. And then Ohio State comes in and says they're going to try to steal him. So you have to give him an extension. I used to do that all the time when I was skinnier. All the time. Everyone said I used to look like fucking Rachel. What's her name?
Maddow?
Yeah. When I didn't have a beard. I'll show you a picture. I got some screenshots of that too. It's like all over my Instagram. Anyway, so... You talk about, like, you have to keep him from going to Ohio State because that's kind of a black eye that you would not want to have to wear going into after 1 year of success in basketball in a sport where they are traditionally unsuccessful. Here's where you get the issues now. If you re-sign him and you give him that extension, that means that after year one, if he's fired, it's a $12.5 million buyout. Now year two, you're in the second year of being really fucking bad. and I think you have a total of like six SEC wins in 2 years, it's horrible. You have less combined wins over the past 2 years like together than you did in year one alone. You have 25 over the past 2 years, which is, it's terrible. But if you fire him, that's going to cost $10 million. So here's the thought process on this, Mike. It's the same at LSU, and it's the same at a lot of other schools when you start thinking about where you're going to compete. Now, where you want to compete for almost every SEC school across the board the most is football. So hear me out when I say, if you fire Lamont Paris, it's going to cost you $10 million. Let's say you're trying to go bring in another coach to come replace him. Well, that's going to be just ballpark, let's say $15 million total. Then you also have to promise that guy, because that guy probably has other suitors, but also why is it a desirable place for me to come to a place that has traditionally been really bad at basketball? You're going to have to promise putting resources into the program. I put out a stat and a graphic today that was from On3 and OU Insider of what the rough estimate of NIL money that was spent by each SEC team this year in basketball. South Carolina's at the very bottom with $5.5 million. So you're probably going to have to double that and say, listen, we're going to give you 10. I can tell you with full certainty, LSU spent at least eight. I know that to be 100% true. LSU finished.
And they're 16th. That bad?
They're that bad. That equates to, it's between eight and 10, but say it's around nine. That equates to $3 million per win you had in SEC play, right? But the same thing with, man, you start looking at this and you're saying, okay, if we fire Lamont Paris, it's going to cost us $10 million. Same with McMahon. Then we're going to have to get a new guy. That's going to cost us 15. And then you have to promise them the resources for a roster that's probably going to be around 10 million as well. So you're talking about all in on a change like that, around 30 to 35, probably closer to $35 million for this, like this change, right? And turnover. That doesn't take away from, well, what if they have to fucking fire Beamer? What if they have to, Paul Maneri is going to cost $3 million when they absolutely fire him at the end of this season. But the $35 million that you've now allocated specifically to basketball, that's taken away from other parts of your program. So like, are you going to go pay $10 million to get a new basketball coach to do what? Finish in the top eight, hopefully, in what is the deepest conference in the country, and then take away that money when it could be spent on football, which probably needs it more and also would bring a lot more pride and overall happiness to the fan base and everyone else associated with it? Probably not. Is that worth it? Probably not. So I think keeping him for another year, you are kind of having the writing on the wall. It's like there's a ceiling over your head for a program like South Carolina basketball, and it's a low ceiling. But at the same time, by keeping that ceiling in place, you're now saying, all right, we are not going to have as low of a ceiling for sports that fucking matter to us, like football, like women's basketball that's elite, and then maybe baseball and other things like that.
Well, that was informative and well thought out, and appreciative that you would drop that knowledge. But all I see now is this coming out of you.
Dude, hold on.
Minus the beard, of course. But that yeah. Could be your tour. Are you guys related?
I used to do a joke on stage and say I can always tell when I'm gaining weight because no one thinks I'm gay or a lesbian anymore. hold on. Rachel Maddow. Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, there's just a lot of pictures that look. But no, back to what you were saying. I think the same thing in LSU and South Carolina are kind of tethered together in the alignment and thinking of this, because the way that you look at both these schools, LSU is kind of a step ahead where it's like they have been good at basketball. Like they want to be good at basketball. And also basketball, the other part of this is they are – thanks, dude.
I thought it was a good one.
Yeah, it was. I mean, but they are a program that has made the Final Four multiple times. But they are a program that, like, has shown they can win in basketball and would like to do that. And also basketball, men's basketball, is traditionally one of very few, if not just one of two, revenue-generating sports – on a college campus. Usually it's just football and men's basketball for a majority of college athletic departments. So you do want to be somewhat effective and like good or average at best at basketball for just like a financial standpoint. But again, you look at what LSU's done. If LSU fires McMahon, they have already spent $54 million on Brian Kelly. They spent $13 million at least for 1 year, and it's a $91 million deal overall with Kiffin. That doesn't include what you're spending on bringing their new assistants in. Charlie Weiss is getting a fuck ton of money. and you have you know, however many other assistants you're bringing in, the buyouts for the assistants that you're leaving, and then, oh, by the way, they spent $40 million in NIL. Are you telling me that in a year where you spent around $180 to $200 million in football, that you're going to start spending, what, 30 to like 30 to 35 in basketball? For what reason? Because I think that's just, if for those two programs, it's just significantly less important to them and the fan bases to win at basketball if it's going to be a deterrent in winning at another school or winning another sport.
Yeah, and speaking of difficult times, hard times in Carolina, how about the football team? I mean, are they cursed too with Pete injured? We don't know when he'll get back. We're optimistic he'll come back. You know, the only silver lining I saw was like, oh, well, they got Josiah Thompson. At least they kept him. Maybe they can develop him. Now he's out for the year. You know,
he's not out for the year.
Josiah Thompson, I'm pretty sure they said out for the year.
No, Josiah Thompson is. Peak is not.
Right. But with Peak down, I thought, well, okay, this will be a good spring for Josiah Thompson to fill a role and establish himself in this new offense. And they're like, ah, he's out too. So now we're down two potential starting offensive tackles. Is how big of a deal is this for Carolina?
Well, I mean, do you like Peak?
I hear he's elite.
Take a peek at these nuts. Hey! So, so here's the thing. Peak is out not for the entire year, as from what we know now. That part I hate because he got injured in a way that was very, very, very preventable. The thing with Thompson is super interesting because Thompson and Beamer have both said this was something they both knew. And that would explain why he entered the portal and then came out of the portal. Yeah, also fair. Pamela's kind of on fire. I'm glad she's here. I think...
How about this one from Brody?
That's what I was laughing at earlier. That was really good.
Did you know that Rhino is a... I don't know if it's true or not. I just saw it on social media. But apparently that Rhino that they used is for sale?
For only $4,000 to $8,000. If you ever paid me from these goddamn shows you have me on with all these people that are paying to make fun of me, then we should just have, that's what we should do, is a fundraiser for that. It's on my left ankle, you fucking idiot. No, so I think the thing with Peak was very preventable because it's on a 3-on-3 basketball tournament, which I was like, I was doing a show, Mike, and I was like, I have to believe that Beamer's smarter than allowing that to happen. I'm sure it didn't. And they were like, and he did. He told it out loud on Ari Wasserman and Andy Staples show, which like that news furthermore made me hate Wasserman way more than I ever had previously. I think the issue with the Thompson thing, which is so odd, I, again, am going to put my faith in that they clearly knew what the whole situation was and we're going to have that worked out. It does explain further, I think, that why he entered the portal and came out of the portal and came back to South Carolina. My question is this: if you knew he was going to be injured and you knew he was going to require surgery, because they said that it was something they knew about since high school. Again, that explains why they might not have had a market for him in the actual portal this year, despite being a former five-star and a 2-year starter at left tackle, albeit not a great starter at left tackle. But if you knew you were going to have surgery, I just continue to ask, like, why the fuck did that not happen already? Because if you were going to have the surgery, the season ended at the very last day of November. You could easily make the argument that the season ended much earlier than that because of how bad that offensive line was and how bad the season was because they went 4-8. So did playing him an extra few weeks against, was it Wofford or whoever it was, and then Clemson, did that really matter? And then also, if you knew this was going to happen, why has it been over 3 months since the end of the season? You've still not had the surgery. That part for me is where I get very confused and I don't really understand it. Maybe also, Mike, if you think about it, if he was planning on entering the portal, is there something where it's like, well, you have to get surgery at your new school or versus here? I don't know the answers to any of that. I do know that losing one of them is frustrating, but and losing two is very, very concerning. It does also open up a lot of competition and a lot of valuable reps for an offensive line that brought in 8 new guys and desperately needs new pieces that are experienced and ready to go because of how fucking bad they were a year ago.
Yeah. Hey, shout out one of your favorites, David Chambers. Hotty toddy. Need to confirm, Mike and Shane still want tickets to Ole Miss and LSU. Hell yeah. Shane and I are coming to your city with Marler's going to be there too, I believe. And now he's playing me over. Man, that, it wasn't probably that good that you had to double audio that. But yeah, for sure, we'll be down there. So we do need tickets. Let's talk Ole Miss for old David.
Yeah.
No. Trinidad getting appealed. A lot of people are like, oh, he's out. He's not out. This has gotten appealed, but it's getting appealed to the Mississippi Supreme Court, which, to my knowledge, has 7 of the 9 judges are Ole Miss grads. So what do you think, Chris? You think they'll take it up?
I'm just so fucking tired of this conversation. I'm so, like, just fucking stop, and let's just say that he's going to play. Should he play? I don't know, and I don't care. I'm excited to see Trinidad Chambliss play college football this year. I am... He is a great story. He is the kind of story that is good for college football in terms of kid came from Division II football, was overlooked everywhere, won a national title there, was brought on midsummer to be a backup. The story is great. I just cannot wrap my head around or pretend to be invested into caring about Trinidad Chambliss tonsillitis like storylines any fucking more. And if I'm being honest about it, again, let me make my thoughts and emotions clear more than anything. I am excited to watch Trinidad Chambliss play college football. I don't know if the NCAA has any chance of winning their appeal, because I think they're playing in two different arenas here. It's like the NCAA is like, well, hold on, we're going to appeal that ruling and see if we can talk some sense into these people. Well, you're not going to be able to talk sense into the people of Mississippi, because it's the fucking state of Mississippi, for one. Two, you're going up against I'm trying to mince my words so I don't say something inappropriate, but like, it's the state of Mississippi court system. And like you said, there are 9 of these 12 judges are Ole Miss grads. And I think fans is a better way to put it, because the way you saw this whole thing play out, we watched a judge cry at his own fucking words when he was like, and he's going to be eligible to play. Like, fuck off, Gerald, like whatever your fucking name is. I have no desire to sit here and pretend that the NCAA is necessarily in the wrong about this, because I don't think they are. I think they're trying to have some sort of like guardrails in place and structure to this sport at the very least. The problem that they have is you got about 150 fucking years of them doing the opposite of that at such an egregious level where players weren't getting paid, that now that no one wants to hear them speak, it's like, you think that the conversations they have in the White House with Nick Saban and how mad people were about that are bad? Imagine being the NCAA. We do not want to hear a single word from the NCAA, because they fucking did a poor job at the one job they had for such a long time that now they're trying to play like, no, I want to be here and be dad again. Like, no, fucking leave. It's you've done nothing good for the sport in quite some time. So if I'm being honest, the logical part of me says he probably shouldn't be allowed to play. But the other part of me is like, no, fuck him. They've had so many players that they ruled ineligible over dumb shit for so long. It's like, why would this be the one where we put our foot down and say, no, you can't play? I had to watch Johnny Manziel and Todd Gurley and fucking AJ Green get in trouble for signing autographs and making like $3,000 because of whatever, and you ruling them ineligible for however long, which were great stars for this sport. They did such good things for this sport as a whole. And now you're like, no, but Trinidad, did he have tonsillitis or did he not? There's a big difference between tonsillitis. Shut the fuck up and just call it a day and go home.
They didn't even suspend Aaron Hernandez. And you mentioned Nick Saban. Did you hear he made $150 million? He needs to shut his damn mouth.
I've said this for multiple years now, and it started with Saban and moved on to Kirby. The last thing that we are ever going to do in this country is feel sorry for millionaires. Now, here's the issue, Mike. If I told you that the person who was the best coach in the history of this sport and was involved in coaching at multiple levels, but specifically in this one, for over a span that covered 4 decades, do you think that guy knows what the fuck he's talking about? Yeah, like, do you think Nick Saban knows what he's talking about? I do. I personally do. So the idea that we're once again in this weird place where it's like, hey, here's what I think. By the way, I'll say it for 1,000th time. I think players should be paid. And they're like, no, fuck that. Nick Saban doesn't want to see players paid. And it's like, he just said it. I don't know why we're even arguing about this. And then it turns into this whole thing where you're like, You want to believe so badly that he paid players. And again, I'll be honest, I'm sure he did. I'm sure a lot of people did, but I would be willing to bet Nick Saban got a lot of those five stars and number one recruiting classes with some sort of outside the lines and bending the rules for sure. It's been going on for fucking decades. I'm sure that he did. There's no tangible proof to any of it. And so the fact that we keep arguing and having the argument be he paid players under the table, we know you don't know that. You can't keep arguing about your own fucking like want and belief of someone because you're so mad about losing to him for so long that you won't allow yourself to say, you know what? Yeah, that guy beat the shit out of my team for a long time and he just ruled this fucking sport with an iron fist. But objectively speaking, I bet he's got some pretty good points to make about how to help the sport. It's so weird to me that we are unable to have any discourse about this without it being like, well, Nick Saban's a hypocrite. This is wrong, blah, blah, blah. I don't know how you fix it. I don't think what happened in Washington was ever going to be something that was fixed because they didn't do enough to like, it felt way more about PR and way more of trying to say, hey, I know people really like college football. This is a really good moment for us from an optics standpoint and PR standpoint, a lot like 2020. If you remember that, like the way all that started was Joe Biden running campaigns and ads in the Midwest saying you're going to lose football because of this guy. And Donald Trump was like, basically like, there's no fucking way. And that's what started this whole back and forth of trying to get the 2020 season back on track. And I remember that because at the time I was like, I spoke a lot at length to the director of specialty media at the White House at the time. I think there's so much that goes into fixing this sport. I don't know what the starting point is and I don't know all the answers to it. I do know that if we don't fucking start listening to people that can't help it just because we don't like them for whatever reason, we're not going to move forward at all. And it's fucking exhausting.
Yeah, take a breath here. So
it makes me so fucking mad, dude.
I'm not even disagreeing with anything you just said. However, Saban retiring when he did, do you think a case could be made that you said, you know, getting players illegally or whatever? I fully believe that was the case. But I think more important, because other people do that too.
Yeah.
And they didn't dominate like he did. But what was paramount to his success, aside from being an all-time great coach and identifying talent and getting them to campus, but the other thing was...
Throw all that out, though.
Well, now, that goes with this. Every possible advantage he could squeeze out that was like in the gray, he would do.
Yeah.
He invented analysts. You know, they had to cap that because of him. They had to cap head coaches going on the road and talking to juniors. They call it the Saban rule. They have to cap, you know, so many things because of what he was doing. And when NIL finally became real, what did he do? He bitched and complained and said, A&M, they're paying everybody. I think he realized that we are not suited to compete with them financially. And I'm not going to do it. I'm going to walk out the door before this catches up to me because perhaps the best advantage we need, which is finance paying the players market value, we're not going to be able to compete. And I think that was a huge factor in him walking away.
Sure. He was also 72 years old and had won 7 national titles. I don't think you're necessarily wrong. I think that even if that's all the case, if we want to sit here and make him out to be the worst possible person, which is fine. Like, I understand hating Nick Saban.
Nothing I said there was hating him. I'm just saying the advantage, he didn't have that big advantage. So he said, I'm leaving.
And if we want to spend time on trying to really get to the root of why Nick Saban left and why he decided not to be a part of the sport and coach it anymore at 72, after all the success that he's had, fine. But what about just fixing the problems? Because if there are a shit ton of problems. And by the way, the whole comment that he made at a fucking, what do you call it, about Jimbo Fisher paying for that recruiting class, which he did. And it's not cheating. NIL was legal. He signed like 8 or 9 five stars. It was the most in history. And he did it at a touchdown club meeting with Bama supporters. So Jimbo Fisher has said a lot of similar things. A lot of coaches that go on the road and talk to their base and their audience and their fans do the same thing. I am not going to sit here and debate whether or not Nick Saban ever paid for a player, he ever bent the rules, or did, that's like totally, I fully believe that he paid for players at some point. What I do know is we don't have any proof of it. And if we did, does it change the parts of where we're trying to fix the sport now? I feel like people are so mad at Saban sometimes. They want him to come out and say, all right, listen, here's all the things you're accusing me of. Here's what I did. Now we can move forward. How about we just fucking fix the problems in the sport? Because everything that he had said is objectively true in terms of what there are, like the issues that there currently are. We have coaches in the SEC that play or that coached under Saban, by the way. So I know where they probably learn some of these things, but you have coaches in the SEC that are getting players that are enrolled in classes at other schools, screenshotting a fucking like contract to them and saying, how about now? Here's a million. Do you want to come play for us? And it's like, I'm in fucking journalism 101 right now. Like, I don't, can I respond to you when I get out at 850? And it's like, okay, 1 million's not enough. How about 2 million? And next thing you know, they're on campus at an SEC school. Again, I like
that would never happen.
What?
That would never happen.
That would never happen at Ole Miss. But like, I remember getting tips all the time back then. There was a dude that was a massive Oregon fan. Just a tip though. And him telling us like the way that Mario Cristobal, he was an Oregon booster, not a fan, but he was the way Mario Cristobal was going around and like bending the rules and how you saw this like influx of Southeastern athletes and four stars shipping up to Eugene, Oregon. And it was like, he would go down there and take a backpack full of a certain amount of money, leave it at the school and say, hey man, I'm so sorry. I forgot my backpack. Can you go check on it for me? And it's filled with cash. Mario Cristobal coached under Nick Saban. Kirby Smart coached under Nick Saban. Jeremy Pruitt, who's coming out of a show cause, coached under Nick Saban. I'm done with the debate of whether he did anything that was like under the table, below the rule, or bending the rules, because I believe that it probably happened. I don't even care to argue if it happened in other places. I just want to fix the current fucking issues. I mean, it is like talking with Nick, when Nick Saban's involved in anything, it feels like you're in the worst fucking, like, what do you call it? Couples counseling ever. Because you're trying to fix a problem that's happening right now. And then someone's like, well, what about 9 years ago when you did this? And you're like, my bad. That's you know what? You're right. I should have done a better job. I left the toilet seat up in fucking 2016. So now we can't fucking fix the problems that we have right now. And it's crazy to me because, like, I think there are so many issues. I think that he probably is someone that can help fix it. To show you how fucking stupid and bad it is, Mike, did you see the no three sports tweet?
No.
No three is the answer there, you dumb idiot. So when somebody said coincidence, I said it wasn't a coincidence. I don't know what answer people want for them to start being okay with it. Because like, what it also breeds, Mike, is it kind of like gives life to this like group of people that talk about college sports in a way that they don't care about college sports. They just care about like, I'm smarter than you. I work for The Athletic. And you're like, just shut the fuck up and let's figure out how to fix the issue. And I don't think that's what happened in Washington, but I do think there is a way to start getting a little bit more structure in place. The no three graphic was probably the most perfect thing that could have been posted because it's a clear parody account and it looks like the on three account, but it says no three. And so people don't want to like take 2 seconds to look at something. So they freak out. It's a picture of Trent Richardson. And it says, when I signed with Alabama, I got $75,000 as a signing bonus. Then my parents got 10,000. And my first thought was there's no way that's real. Cause he probably got more. He was a five-star running back that like was the number two ranked 100 meter sprinter and power lifter in the state. Like that dude got more than 75K. But as soon as it was posted, LaShawn McCoy, who played the NFL for years, thank you. Trent finally said it. Bama's been cheating for years. And then Luther Campbell from Miami, the guy from Two Live Crew, he comments on it. He goes, this is what all these white coaches want when they want to go back to how it used to be. And it's like, brother, you were literally in a 30 for 30 paying players. And you're looking down your nose at what you think could have happened. It's like, everyone shut the fuck up. Everyone quiet and let's figure out a plan to fix it. Stop fucking yelling about shit that happened 10, 15 years ago, and let's address the problems that are happening now.
You ever heard Coach O, his famous line on NIL? He said, we used to pay him in the back door. Now with NIL, we just pay him through the front door.
Yes, 1,000%. I love this comment. I love you, David Chambers, but I'm going to pick on you for a second. And it says, ask Siski how many bags he delivered for Saban. This is one of the reasons we can't have this conversation, because we can't even spell fucking Saban's name right. And we're still arguing about how, whether he did. Listen, there are stories that I have been told that I fully believe to be true about what and who were paid under Nick Saban. I think it happened. I remember hearing about the Justin Fields thing at Georgia. I got in trouble at SDS about this because we were on a podcast and they were talking about Justin Fields, how he had $100,000 in cash dropped off on his front porch to go to Georgia. And my first response was, that's a fucking steal. $100,000? Like, for the number one quarterback in the country? Also, the inconvenience of that, if you have $100,000, how do you even put that in the bank? Like, there's just
there's limits. I think you can only put $9,999 a week or something.
Just in cash. Going to the ATM like with a bag. I think that the issues are so, and here's the thing too, Mike. There's so many issues that so many people are just as passionate about, like just as frustrated about things that are corrupt in college sports. Like you have collectives that are paying all these players, and it's not just football. It's basketball too. Like where you have collectives that are being able to pay all these people, and so for you to bring in Urban Meyer, who was running the most corrupt program imaginable in the 2000s at Florida, with not just paying players, but fucking keeping them out of jail. And mostly he had 41 players go to jail from that team. Think about how many players probably should have gone to jail from that team and didn't. Like, and that you're bringing him and Nick Saban in to talk about how to fix the rules that they definitely broke. I get that it's frustrating, but it's also, we're talking about something that's, you are as a fan, just as frustrated about. So how do we get so fucking ADD? And that's coming from me, so it's crazy, to where, like, when you start talking about this as a subject, we can't just put aside, like, well, it better come from somebody else besides Nick Saban. I hate Tommy Tuberville. I hate him with a passion. He has the biggest ears and the biggest ego out of any fucking person I think I've ever met. He wants to do daylight savings time. You know what? I would love to have fucking extra sunlight. I put my hatred aside for Tommy Tuberville and say, you know what? Fucking go figure out a way to pass that. I don't know how people cannot just put aside their anger for one person for the, like, let's just move forward with the fucking sport. It's crazy.
Right. And I do think there are things they can attempt to fix. Get it out of hands of the government. That's the stupidest shit I've ever heard.
Yeah.
But even things as simple as you got 5 years to play. Hell, I don't even care if it's five seasons, but five's a year, no more, no less, you know? And I think if you transfer, you have one transfer. And if you want multiple, you can do multiple, but you got to sit out a year. Go back to that. Now, I think maybe even the coaches would have to give up something where maybe they got to honor their contracts. You know, if the players have to, I think the coaches should. And just shit as simple as that, believe it or not, I think we'll fix a lot of this. Because as long as we don't have the players jumping in the portal every damn year and driving up their price and negotiating, and same deal with the coaches, I think that fixes a lot of this stuff.
I agree. I think you need a cap across the board on so many things. And that's, I'm all for capitalism and all that kind of shit. But at the same time, it's like you've just let greed run this sport for so long. And if we're being honest, Mike, I think that that's probably something like if I was trying to fix this sport day one, right? I am probably saying, listen, we're doing the one-time transfer thing, and the rules are going back to where how they used to be like 10 years ago to like an extent. You can still transfer. You can have one transfer and to better your situation or whatever. But then this whole idea where you're going to transfer, you're going to be Bear Alexander and go to a different place every 4 years, and there's no, you know, alignment, no, like the NIL stuff, man, this is from day one when it went through, it was different from state to state. It was different from conference to conference, team to team. It's so all over the place. There's no uniform or like universal type of like place or rules that are in place. and that creates chaos, and that's what we're currently in. So, and if I'm a coach or a player, and I'm looking around seeing all these other people doing the stuff that we're complaining about, I'm not going to sit and be like, no, I'm going to be on my high horse. I'm not doing that. But like, again, you look at the sheer numbers of it, right? You look at the sheer numbers of this whole thing. We're paying coaches. We're going to get to 15 to 20 million, I think, in the next 5 to 10 years. And they won't be worth that. I mean, we're talking about 2 years ago, NIL spend and roster, like the monetary value of a elite championship roster at Ohio State was $20 million. And we thumbed our nose at that. We're like, that's unbelievable. They just paid for a championship and blah, 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 blah. Then Oregon did the same thing. And Texas did the same thing. And then you look at this year, no, not to pick on Emily, but Auburn, by their own admission, has a $30 million roster. And you start really looking at that and saying, what is that going to, is Auburn going to make the playoff? I don't know. But like $30 million to compete and really in their place, salvage a roster because of all the people they lost with the turnover from the new coach. What does that equate to? I mean, LSU spent $18 million last year and went 7-6. You could argue that roster last year, even though it was half the price, was more skilled, like because of all the people they brought in from the evaluations and shit. And I don't know what the cutoff is. We're going to get to 50 for sure. It's the next logical step. Like that's going to happen. But if you make a cap of saying, this is what you're allowed to spend, we are going to see what you're giving the NIL to each player. And anything over that, if we find out you're fucking doing it under the table, there's going to be severe consequences. At some point, someone has to step in. It just turns out that the two entities that they have brought in to help are arguably the biggest fucking jokes from an organizational standpoint imaginable. It's fucking the government, the fucking government and the NCAA. And you're sitting here looking at this like, why the fuck would they fix it? That's like getting like Enron to come in and talk about like, no, here's, we want to really get a fix on insider trading. You know what? Nancy Pelosi's been stealing a lot of money and taking her taxpayer funded salary and investing in all this shit. We're going to get the guys at Enron to come in and try to help us out and fix it. And you're like, no, you're not.
Last thing I got for you.
No chance.
Would you be in favor of totally transparent NIL?
Yes. 1,000%. Yeah.
Because I think that needs to happen as well.
I think you're right. I think one of the biggest issues is like I used to think that that's bad because you in a locker room, you don't want guys knowing what the other guys are making because of how dysfunctional that's going to create, you know, the environment in your locker room, but it's going to happen either way. And now you look at that like 5 years later, Mike, and you're like, that's the fucking least of our concerns. That's just the least of our concerns. So I think you have to put a cap on it. I think you have to make it public. And the worry that the people have, they pretend to have with that is, well, we don't want to have these kids have like their salaries made public because then, you know, what if they don't have a good game and people are saying like, you should effing blank yourself because you are getting paid $2 million and you had three drops in this game or something if you're a receiver and you're like, that is no longer our biggest concern. There's so much chaos and so much fucking ridiculous, like wild, wild west, a part of the sports, or I was gonna say this sport, but this and college basketball, it's ungovernable. And again, the fact that like Josh Pate sits down with the president, and I understand why people hate Donald Trump. I am not the biggest fan of Donald Trump. I just also think that it's a perfect example of, hey, let's have a conversation about sports. You told me you're going to talk to me about sports. I'm not going to turn on an interview with the president. And people are like, fuck this guy. I've liked this guy for a long time, but I hate him now because he's talking to someone I don't like. And it's like, we're so far past the ability to have discourse in almost anything. It is only hampering our ability to have decisions and progress made across the board. And it's until we figure out a way that I don't want to get in this whole fucking kumbaya, everyone's great, let's all love each other moment. But like, my God, until we're able to have like discussions without so much fucking anger, and I'm not the one to be the one to do it, but like to have discussions without so much anger and vitriol towards each other, it's nothing's going to get fixed ever.
Wise words from you. That's stunning. All right. Last thing, breaking news here. Arch Manning limited. are we concerned? No, this is real. I'm not spouting off BS here.
The Dalton Barnett comment says, Marler, give me 57 reasons why Jace Barnett isn't the best receiver in the country. Exactly. You can't. That made me laugh. That was good.
Are we concerned? Arch Manning limited in practice.
No, I mean, probably not. I mean, like, I'm trying to think of, like, me and Hunt Palmer talked about this a while back, Mike. You look at, like, the SEC quarterbacks who've been able to play a full year. Ty Simpson was hurt last year. I think Gunnar Stockton got through the entire year. But even, like, a year before that, Quinn Ewers was out for three games. Arch had to come in. Lenore Sellers missed a game and a half in 2024. Robbie Ashford had to come in. You had the flip-flops at Auburn. You had Florida, obviously. DJ Lagway came in for Graham Mertz a couple years ago. Like, it's very difficult to get through a full slate of SEC football and keep that guy clean and keep that guy healthy for all 12 games. So I will take the sunshine pumping route and say I think that it creates a lot of reps and valuable reps and meaningful reps for the backup. If he's injured in fall camp, then yeah, we got to talk.
Yeah, okay. Backup. That's what we're going to do. Let's back up out of here, buddy. We appreciate you. Before you go, plug your socials and where people can find your work.
Vern_Funquist on Twitter. And then, what do you call it?
How about the podcast?
Oh, yeah. Locked on Gamecocks on the podcast. Appreciate that. Fourth and Wrong. Love another.
If you want more of this cock, check him out.
And then this weekend, if you are in the Baton Rouge area or you have the internet, we'll be starting my new show on Eagle 98.1. So there you go.
Can you drop a link? I'll share it here.
Yeah, I don't have a name for it yet. So I need some help on that. This is probably not the right group to ask for this, but I
definitely isn't.
No. Yeah, I think the last comment about me was Marler definitely went to the island. So that's nice.
There's the name for the show. All right. Marler went to the island. We'll catch you on the next one. We appreciate you, buddy. We'll be back tonight with Cousin Shane. See ya.
Hey, buddy. This beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.